Baptist Church, a church on the way to God's heart, presents a message for your life. Get ready and take notes, because God wants to speak to you today. And now, Pastor David Rodriguez.
He has some flashbacks in the movie where he goes back to where he was mistreating Christians and killing Christians and stuff like that. But it's not about his conversion or his life. But it's much more about his writings and the important fact that God prompted and inspired the man, Paul the Apostle, to write these things to us, to the church. That's what the movie is mostly about. And of course, we see the character Luke that comes along as his helper. When you read the book of Acts, you can tell that Luke became a very important character in the moves of Paul and in his writings. But it was portrayed as if Luke is coming over to encourage Paul to write these things to the churches. And that's okay with me. Theologically, there wasn't but a couple of things that you find in there that may be a little iffy, but not big things. And many people are concerned that when they watch the movie, Paul seemed like a weak vessel. And you think of Paul as the Apostle Paul, the one who preached, the one who said this and that. And really and truly, that's not the description that Paul gives himself. And when we think about Paul, we may think of this strong man who preached and said these harsh words and things like that. Yeah, he preached with passion, and he preached inspired by the Holy Spirit. But he mentions himself as the weak one, as the humble one, as the little one at all times. And many even speculate, some of the people who like to study those things, that Paul was most likely a short, stubby man with a big nose, problems with his eyes, not too good to look at. Not like me. Okay, so some of you are like thinking, Pastor David, no, totally different. He was a lot uglier than me, most likely. No, I'm just kidding, right? But I want you to think that because we have this Apostle Paul figure about this maybe tall man with strength and this deep voice and stuff like that, and yeah, okay, that's fine. We don't know, but I want you to think about the way he portrays himself as the little one, as the humble one. As a matter of fact, the name Paul means little one. His name means little one. But I want you to look at some pictures here, and I want you to think about love. Love, love. Are you thinking about love right now? Are you thinking about love, Danny? You think about love? No, come on, think about love, bro. Just for a second. Think about love. Don't hate. Just think about love. You thinking about love? All right. I want you to look at these pictures that I'm going to show you. And you thinking about love, I want you to see these pictures. As a matter of fact, that picture, I would have put the other ones, but there was too many. But all of the soldiers are in rank, and they're all at attention, standing there. And all of a sudden, this little two-year-old breaks out from mama and runs over. And as you can see, she's dressed with a flag and everything. And she goes straight to her dad, and all of them are standing like this, and she hugs him right in the middle of formation, interrupting the service, you know. And there she is. She made the news. She made all kinds of shows on TV because of what she did. But I want you to think about that picture and love. Think about this. Think about love. You see, friendships, not just fatherly love and, you know, loving your daddy or your mom. I want you to think about this. Love. What is love? Give me the next one. Think about that. Aw. I know moms are like, oh, baby, cute. Love. Come on, give me another one. Romantic, right? Love. Warming each other in the middle of winter. Pictures of love. Some of you may even remember this picture coming up. I've shown you the video. You've probably seen it on the news. Some of you remember this? The Olympic Games in Barcelona, 1992. This competitor You remember that? He actually cramped. One of his legs cramped in the middle of the race. Right before finish. And his dad came out onto the stadium, picked his son up, and brought him all the way to the finish line. If you've never seen the video, I'm almost about to cry just talking about it. You have to see it. Go check it out. Barcelona, 1992. This is awesome. Talk about pictures of love. Now, I want you to relate all those pictures to the love of God. I mean, love is the only way, right? You've heard that phrase before? Well, if you watch the movie, you've heard it, right? But if you haven't, maybe you've heard it somewhere else. But what beautiful moments we have seen in these little pictures and things that we can, that capture our emotions and bring us to a point where we feel, you know, hopeful, secure, we feel safe, we feel connected, cherished. And we, you know, it's no wonder that love is a popular thing, right? Because love is a wonderful thing. Those of you who are older than me probably remember that kind of stuff, and you lost that love and feeling, if not. Can you even begin to count how many songs and movies and books have been written about love? You see, sometimes we may hear something and it'll overplay in our minds and play all over and all over and all over again in our heads. I mean, even though we see a lot of hate in the world, we are fascinated by the concept of love. I think everybody longs for love. That's the way God made us. And this is not a new thing. This is not a today thing. I mean, if you look at literature, if you look at poems and all the way through the ages and every kind of even mythology and historical things you see, and love permeates all kinds of things. And because we're fascinated by love. And of course, where do these love concepts come from? And once we think of love, let's go to the Bible, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. This is a very simple chapter about love or section about love that sometimes we use or we think we encapsulate it in a marriage. When we read these words from the Apostle Paul, most of the people think, marriage, and it's used in weddings, and it's used in engagements, and it's used in anniversaries, because love, 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 love. But this is not the essence of this passage. It's not marriage. It's not a relationship between a man and a woman. It's a relationship of God to us and us to God and to others. It's the love of God that first gets described here. All right, but let's read. If I speak with tongues, actually, let's start in verse 4, because all this stuff, I want to start in verse 4. Love is what? Patient. Love is kind. Is not jealous. Do you love somebody? Have you ever been jealous? Why? Love is not jealous, right? Yeah, I know. Hey, I felt jealous before. Yeah, I know, right? Love is kind. Love is not jealous. Love does not brag. It's not arrogant. Wow, all kinds of things. Yeah, I know that when you talk about all these ideas, if you're married, all of a sudden your marriage starts pew, 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 flashing in your head and thinking about times in which you and her or you and him have been in something like this, back and forth. Or love does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. It is not provoked. Sure. Okay. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. We are so loving. It does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things. How many things does it bear? It's all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things. And I like the beginning of verse 8. Love never fails. Love never fails. Now, of course, if you think about those now, as always, you put them in light of your relationship to your wife or your spouse or your friends and everything or and everybody, but when you put them in the light of God, then all of a sudden you understand why it does it say that love does not act unbecomingly. That's God. Love is not jealous. That's God. Well, wait a second. The Bible says that he is jealous for us. Yes, he is, but not unhealthy jealousy like we have. Like I'm jealous, so I want to kill somebody or smack somebody around. No. See, God, love does not do any of those things when you talk about God's love. So that's what we want to talk about. This is a beautiful description, of course. And it gives us, you see, that's the essence of God. What we've seen in that passage, not the essence of marriage, but the essence of God. But a lot of times we wishy-washy read over these passages like this, and we just kind of read them and, love is a wonderful thing, whatever. But we need to shift our minds and think about when Paul writes these things, think about what's going on around him. Think about a man that's writing, love does not boast. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. Love does not take into account a wrongdoing. And he is being persecuted. He's in jail. He's been condemned to die. And he's writing these things. Why? It's amazing. Now, what I want to do now is just watch a little clip of the movie when Luke comes to visit Paul and he talks to him about the necessity, the importance of Paul writing about these things. Luke encouraging Paul to say, you need to write about these things because Paul says, love is the only way. So Luke says, then write about it. Now check it out. I don't want to mess it up.
Evil can only be overcome with good.
Well, considering all they've been through, can you really fault their response, Paul?
What did you tell them?
Love is the only way.
And after all you've seen, you still don't believe it.
This isn't anything I've seen. My God. This is a world in the grip of evil. This is Nero's circus. It's passionate hate. Blood washing down in the street. Widows, orphans starving to death. Babies born with the slightest defect or disposed, dispatched, discarded.
This world doesn't know a thing about love.
So you would give up on the world when Christ did not give up on us?
Why not?
No.
Why not?
Love is the only way. Love that suffers long. Love that is kind. That does not envy, that is not proud. Love that does not dishonor. That does not seek for itself. Love that is not easily angered. Love that rejoices in truth. Love that never delights in evil. Love that protects, trusts, hopes, endures all things. That kind of love. Give me your hand. Do you understand? Then write it down.
Do you understand? Then write it down. One of the things that happens in those times is that a lot of times the author did not write the letters. they had scribes or people who wrote for them, and especially the Apostle Paul, as he lost his vision at the beginning of his call, it is believed that after he regained his vision, he still had vision problems because of certain passages. So therefore, it is believed that other people helped him write all those writings. And so you see the allusion here of Paul telling Luke, you know, write about it. Write it up. You know, those are the things that I'm saying, then write them up, okay? So you see the context in which this is being written. You see the context in which Paul is talking about these things. You see what's going on. Luke describes us as a world in the grip of evil. A powerful leader like Nero was making a circus out of Christians. They were lighting Christians up as torches in the city. Can you imagine that, going down the French Quarter streets and people are lit on fire in the corners to light up the streets? That's what was going on. There was a lot of hate, passionate hate, blood washing down the streets, babies being aborted, babies being killed, widows and orphans starving to death. That's what was going on. And especially if you were a Christian, you were surely going to suffer something, some way or somehow. You see, so in the context of all that, hate and suffering is when Paul then writes this letter and writes these beautiful words. He wasn't sitting in a cushy, cushiony place and in a good hotel room with room service or anything like that. He was in hardship. He was persecuted. Remember Paul? And when you look at his life in the book of Acts, he had been accused. He had been beaten and whipped and imprisoned, stoned. You name it. He had gone through it all. He suffered unimaginable suffering that we cannot even think, you know. But we are kind of like strangers to suffering and things like that, even though in some way we're not. Maybe we're not being persecuted and beaten and taken up at a stake and put up, to be crucified or to be lit as a torch. But sometimes also we face persecution. We face persecution internally in our hearts, even our own selves, persecuting our old self, bringing us down. You see, you think about this. Paul, who was Saul before, had persecuted and killed people. He had killed Christians. These are the same people, the Romans, that killed Jesus at the cross. You see, this is all that was happening. Nero had accused Christians of burning the city. And some people say he didn't. Some people say he did. Some people, whatever. But he started burning Christians. He started doing atrocities against the people who believed in Jesus. That's the reality of the day. And I want you to think of Romans 12:21, where Paul himself says, do not repay evil with evil, but do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's totally the opposite of what we think when we've been wronged. Love is easy to say, but to actually take action, it's a totally different thing. Now, here we see it every day. We see the persecution of people, not necessarily for being a Christian, but you know what's happened in the schools. And back in the days when they said, we don't need prayers in the schools, now everybody's praying for the schools. Even though prayer is banned, Jesus is banned from school. The only way you should have Jesus if you're homeschooled. But you can't take Jesus to school. But they can take guns to school and stuff like that. You see what I'm talking about? You look at what's going on in the streets and people. I don't watch the local news very often, but it seems like every time I turn on the radio, especially, and I hear this, you know, the snippets of the news on the hour or on the half hour. A man was shot in such street. Another man was shot at that other street. And another person was shot. And a baby was shot. And a kid was shot. And he keeps shooting. And everybody. See, But love is the only way, Paul said. Are we really, really, really believing that? You know, let me just give you a couple of things here. First of all, we are called to love. We are called to love. That's our call. That's our call. God called us to love. You see, we can see tragedy. We can have heartache. Look at these people using chemical weapons against innocent children and women. Oh, my God. This is amazing what's going on nowadays. I don't know what to say. The terrorism that's going on. People get treated unfairly wherever they go. When somebody's cruel to another person that you love, when somebody's cruel to your own children in school, when somebody does something against your own daughter or your own son, you think about that. When somebody else chooses themselves over you while you wait for them to love you, when you speak hurtful words to one another, what do you do? When people do stuff like that to you, what do? Oh, you got to toughen up. This is tough stuff, you know. What are you going to do with somebody? You're going to respond. You're going to retaliate. You're going to do this. You're going to defend yourself. We teach our children. I don't ever hear a parent telling their child, if you go to school and another kid hits you, you love him. And you pray for him. You hug him. And you tell him it's okay. No, you grab him by the neck and you strangle him until you put him down and he's out of air and you run to the principal. That's what you do. You smack him around. Oh, no, you know what you don't. You think about that? What were we taught? What were we told? You don't want to be bullied. If somebody bullies you, guess what the answer is? You bullied him back. Isn't that what we're teaching? We go on these campaigns about bullying, but we tell our children, if you get bullied, you let me know. I'll go bully him. Come on. Justice. We're looking for justice, but we forget that God's justice is based on love. That's the big difference. And this kind of love that we're talking about requires that we change our perspective. You see, we got to be different. Something's got to be different. I want you to see in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 and 45, this is Jesus speaking. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But then he says, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. This is Jesus saying, do not hate your enemy. Pray for them. Love them. You see, Paul wasn't speaking because he just came up with an idea. The idea was God himself, was Jesus himself saying, this is what you need to do. And Jesus experienced it. Now, I want you to look at what Luke says, the same passage, but in the gospel according to Luke chapter 6, verses 27 and 28. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Can you do that? Can I do that? Yes, we can. Do we do it? That's the other question. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. That's what the answer is. Love. Love is the only way. But I don't like that way, Pastor. I like it my way. Well, go to Burger King. Have it your way. But don't come to Jesus the King with your way. You can't have it your way with Jesus. You can do that with Burger King, which I love anyway. But you see, this is the words that Jesus are telling people. You think people wanted to hear that? Nobody wanted to hear that. You see, they were waiting for the Messiah to come over and actually do the opposite.
destroy the enemies, not love the enemy. What is wrong with Jesus? What is wrong with Paul? What are you talking about? What are you talking about loving enemies? You see, I think we can relate. Haven't you seen what they did to me? Did you hear what she said? Oh, heck no. I'm posting this. Oh, I'm calling so-and-so. Oh, no, guess what? I ain't talking to them no more. Bravo, Christian. Bravo. That's what we do. Now, guys, when I speak of these things, I want you to know that I'm on the same boat. I float on the same boat that you do. Because sometimes I do the same thing. And that's not love. Jesus is calling us to say, you can do this. You need to trust perfect love. You need to trust the love of God. You see, he wants to heal us. If we are not able to love our enemies, we need healing. If we're not able to respond with good and overpower evil, we need healing. We're sick. Something's wrong with us, not them. Us to start with. Because if we claim that we are children of God, remember what he said, if you that say that you're the sons of the Father of God, then we need transformation. See, we can't just gloss over our words and forget about it. You see, now, of course, I'm not talking either that when somebody attacks you, you just, like I said, gloss it over and that's it. And like, it's okay, I'm not worried about you. Don't worry. It's all good, because then you go home and you start churning that up and it's not true. You know, I'm not talking about accepting brutality and putting a blind eye to what's going on or a deaf ear or anything like that. But putting up with injustice sometimes may be the only way to show true love, unfortunately. See, love is not just a feel-good emotion, but a choice to action. Love is an action to love. That's a verb. You don't just feel love. You have to love. It's an action that you have to take. It's something that you have to do. You see, God's love does not ignore evil, but it meets evil by overpowering it with good. Do you hear that? That's a big difference. Jesus didn't say, ignore it when they do evil to you. He didn't say, ignore it. He didn't say, just forget about it. No, he said, counter it with evil. Counter it with evil. Can you imagine what happens not in the life of the other person? Because we're so impressed. When somebody does something wrong to us and we do good, and their reaction is like, oh. Well, I didn't expect that. And we're so baffled, like, yeah, stomp you. See, you didn't know that was coming back to you with love, right? See, sometimes we're like that, and we get to, like, enjoy our sarcasm. Because we want to respond with something positive when something negative is done to us. But it's not for their sake, but for our sake to say, look at them. Have you done it? Has anybody ever done that? Oh, my God, when you're on the road and somebody crosses you and somebody does something to you and they give you the universal sign of love, right, with one finger, what do you do? That's what I do sometimes. Am I doing it out of love? No. I'm actually hating them even more because I'm like, I'm laughing at you, not laughing with you. Sometimes I even blow kisses. That's not good, bro. That's not good. That is wrong. See, we're misconstruing all this. Do good when evil has been done to you. Respond with good. I'm a hypocrite. Yes, I am. That's not what I'm talking about. You need to overpower. When you truly overpower evil, the evil that's done to you with good, the other person sees it, and you are transformed. Maybe not them, but it's about you. You can't change other people. Don't try to change people. Don't try to change them. You know why? Because you mess them up even more. And they don't want you to change them anyway. Who said anything about, hey, can you help me? Can you change me? Nobody's asking you to change them. You let God do that. I love it when people say, oh, no, they got to hear it. You know, they need to hear that. And since they need to hear it, I'll be the one to tell them. I'll be God's instrument. Wow, that's awesome. See, that's not the way, but love is not just an emotion. You have to take action. But that action needs to be born out of love, true love, because that's the only way. And God's love is not about ignoring evil. It's about meeting it and overpowering it with love. Well, let's look at the last two things here. So how do we do this? How do we do this? How do we emulate Christ's love? How do we take what's been given to us and show it to others so that it'll flow right through us, so that we become what he is, so that we are transformed and changed? The Apostle Paul knew that God's love and forgiveness, it's not a game. And it's not a for better or for worse. You know, you hear that in marriage and in weddings, right? For better or for worse. Yeah. That's not what love is. Love is not for better or for worse. It's more like for truth and grace. That's what love really is. See, we like to think of all of these things that are going on in our world and think about it in a way that's those evil people. And we like to quantify sin, right? We catalog sin. Well, that's a bad sin. This is not so bad. You're not a bad person because you don't commit those bad sins that other people do. I mean, I know you're a sinner, but it's still, a sinner is a sinner before the eyes of God, no matter what. And we qualify sin and we quantify sin in certain ways. And I can understand that there are some sins that have greater and worse consequences than others. But there's one thread that runs through every sin, and that is condemnation, because we deserve it, no matter how big or small it is. The fact is that we are condemned by God because of sin. It doesn't measure it, big or small. And when we don't have Christ, we are filled with sin and death, darkness. That's what we are, and that's what we are, and we need to change. So our hearts need to be transformed in order for us to emulate that love. See, Christ overcame evil. He was the perfect example, right? And how did he do it? Through his death, laying down his life. When was the last time you were willing to lay down your pocket? When was the last time you were willing to lay down your thoughts? When was the last time you were willing to lay down your will? When was the last time you were willing to lay down your sadness, your emotion, your hurt, and your pain for love? Well, God did that in his son, and he laid down his life, not just his pocket, not just his thoughts, not just anything. He laid down all of his life for you and me so that we would be forgiven. See, and there's an instance in which Paul tells Luke in the movie, so you're going to give up on the world? So you're going to give up on it? And sometimes we as Christians, we walk around like we've given up on the world. All we're waiting is for Jesus to come back so we can go to heaven. This world is going to hell in a handbasket. Nothing I can do, so what the heck? Whatever. But we can't give up. We have to love. Can we believe that there is such love? Can we really, truly believe in our hearts that we can love that way? No. This is a process. It is not tomorrow. I'm not giving you the formula so tomorrow you be the loving Christian 100% that you need to be. But this is a process, and it takes time. But it's only God working in our lives and transformation that's going to do it. So I'm just going to give you a couple of steps that may be helpful. Practical things. Number one, come on, Pray for your enemies, and it will change your perspective. I want you to pray for your enemies, and it will change your perspective. Simple. We, beyond Jesus' example that we saw in Luke chapter 6 and Matthew chapter 5, there are so many others in the Bible. What did Jesus say on the cross about his enemies while he was hanging there? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgive them. Forgive them. And all of the mocking and all of the, hey, if you're the Christ, you know, get off the cross and save the others. He could have done that. But he knew there was a bigger stake, a bigger thing to do, which was to lay his life down for us. How many of you know Stephen? In Acts chapter 7, Stephen is telling the story. He's preaching out in public. And Paul is out there watching him. He was still in the flesh. And Saul is out there and most likely gave the order. This young man, Stephen, is preaching and he's telling the story. And he's saying, Jesus is the one. And Saul ordered him stoned. And what did Stephen say before he died? Look at verse 60, Acts chapter 7. This is Stephen on the brink of dying. Falling to his knees, he cried out with a loud voice, Lord, do not hold this sin against them. Having said this, he fell asleep. Stoned to death and right before dying, he gave up his spirit in the same manner as Jesus did. Forgive them. Do not take into account what they have done. Now, you talk about prayer. You talk about praying for your enemies. Prayer changes our perspective because it reminds us that God is in control no matter the circumstances. A lot of times we don't want to pray for our enemies. We don't want to pray for the people who've done wrong to us because why? We want that God to condemn them. We don't want God to save them. We don't want God to forgive them. We want God to punish them. But we have to understand that God is in control no matter what circumstances, that you have no control, you have no jurisdiction, you have no power. That's not of you. You have no authority. So all of a sudden, what happens when you pray for your enemies? I want you to think about this. Why is praying for your enemies so transforming and changes your perspective? Because when you pray for others, you're no longer focused on who? On self. A change of perspective means that you look at things differently, right? When I'm looking at you and I'm praying for you, that takes my vision off of me, off of self. Therefore, I see something different. And when I pray for you, and I truly pray for you with all of my heart, with love, that's going to change me. To start with, my perspective is going to change because my love is going to grow for you, hopefully. And if it doesn't, keep praying, and it will grow. You think the Holy Spirit doesn't have the power to help you love your enemies? It takes the focus out of you. You don't look at yourself anymore. You see, isn't that what love is? Being selfless? Isn't that what love is all about? Taking my eyes off of self and taking my eyes and putting them on everybody else, good or bad, evil or whatever, and saying, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to care for you. I'm going to place you at the foot of the cross. I'm going to take you with me. I'm going to help you. I'm going to uplift you. That's love. You see, praying for your enemies will change your perspective, will change your heart. It will definitely transform you. It will give you a wider angle on your lens, you know. It'll show you the opposing viewpoints and where you need to be standing instead of engaging in arguments and war. We ought to be engaging in prayer and intercession. God is in control. So what do we need to do? Simple. Practice the golden rule. Practice the golden rule. What is the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have done to yourself. Do with others what you would like them to do to you. What would I want you to do? I want you to respect me, so I need to respect you. I need to start. What do I want? I want you to see me as who I am. Well, I'm going to see you as who you are. I want you to be honest with me, so I'm going to be honest to you. I want you to love me, so I'm going to love you. I'm going to respect you, so you respect. You see, everything, that's the way it is. You cannot demand, expect, and want without giving and without you yourself placing the expectations of self first. Jesus said in Matthew 7:12, simple, do unto others as you would have done to you. A simple guideline. How do you want to be treated? Treat others like that in everything, therefore. In what? That's a key word that we always dismiss in this passage. We forget about this. We always talk about the golden rule, treat people the same way you want to be treated. But we forget that it says in what? In everything. Not just when I want to. Not just when I like it. Not when I think it's fair. It's in everything all the time. Think about role reversing. That's a great tool. Please do so. When you're hurt, role reverse it. What would you want the other person to do if you hurt them? See, Jesus said, by this, and I want you to look at that, John chapter 13, verse 35. Remember when he was at the table with the disciples and he washed their feet? And he told them, you need to stop this bickering and stuff around. You see, by this all men will know that you are my disciples. If you what? If you love one another. Love. Love. Love is the only way. That's what Jesus envisioned for his followers. That's what Paul wrote about the followers of Jesus. The one mark that needs to identify you and they as disciples of Christ. It's our love, period. Jesus said it so many times. And if you love me, then obey me. And if you love me, then obey me. Love is the basis for everything. It's hard, but it's a simple truth. Love is the only way. Well, then, what is love? Have you ever read 1 John chapter 4? God is love. I want you to look at two verses there before we finish. And this is love, verses 10 and 11. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son to be propitiation for our sin. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Think about it. That's love. That even knowing, have you ever thought God knew before the creation that you would mess it up, that you would go against the grain, that you would go in the wrong direction, that you would hurt others, that you would hurt him, that you hurt yourself. God knew that from the beginning. God knew the evil intentions of your heart and mind from the beginning. And yet he chose to send his son to die for you and me. He already knew. It still baffles humanity. That's why people still ask the question, how come if God is love, how come he allows all this evil to happen in the world? Yeah, that's a hard question to ask. But why don't you ask yourself this other question when you're confronted with that? How come a God that is so righteous would allow his perfect only begotten son to die for a sinner like me? Now that's love. You want to question God's love? Question it that way. And you'll see it from a totally different perspective. God loved his enemies. Because the Bible says, even Paul, that you and I were once enemies. So he loved you and me. That means he loves his enemies. Yet he chose to send his son to die so that we could be forgiven and that we could experience that love that overpowers evil and sin. I think it's a simple truth. Love is the only way.
Horeb Baptist Church, a church on the way to God's heart, presented a message for your life.
If this message has been an impact to your life, or you would like more information of previous sermons and information about our church, contact us at www.horebnola.com.